We'll go ahead and start the meeting here. It looks like 10:04. Before proceeding with any business, I believe Ross has a statement to make.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. A public notice of this meeting containing all items on the proposed agenda has been filed in the Office of the Secretary of State as required by Chapter 551 Government Code, referred to as the Open Meetings Act. I would like this, like for this fact to be noted in the official record of this meeting. Thank you.
Okay, action item number one, approval of the minutes from the previous council meeting held January 28th, 2016, which were distributed. I'm sure everybody read all 150 pages, but do I have a motion to approve them?
So move.
We're all second it.
Second. All right. Thank you very much. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Action item number two, consideration by council of staff recommendations regarding applicant eligibility, project eligibility, and eligibility project costs in Texas Farm and Ranch Lands Conservation Program project proposals. Mr. Ted Hollingsworth.
Chairman, members of the council, good morning. My name is Ted Hollingsworth. I'm with the Land Conservation Program here at Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. This item is essentially a housekeeping item. In this recent cycle of grant applications, we became aware of the fact that there were some specifics that we had not sought specific council feedback on. Although the answers to some of these questions seem to be implicit in statute, they're not specified as such. And so we thought it good to come to council and ask for some clarification going forward. Statute does define a qualified easement holder as a state agency, county, municipality, or Section 501c3 organization organized for the purpose of preserving agriculture, open space, or natural resources, and qualified to hold a conservation easement. Statute does not go on to say that that any qualified easement holder is also a qualified applicant. And although we proceeded on that assumption, we thought it good to come to the council and ask the council to confirm that going forward they would like to have that field of applicants open to all qualified easement holders, including state agencies, counties, municipalities, or Section 501c3 organizations. Secondly, there was a definition of a qualified project, which is a project designed to conserve water quality or quantity, conserve natural wildlife species through protection of their habitat, conserve rare or sensitive plant species, or conserve large tracts of qualified open space land that are threatened with fragmentation or development. But there was not a way to determine when those criteria were met. When the program was under the auspices of the GLO, did prepare some guidance that said essentially that any property that was under a 1D1 tax valuation for agriculture or wildlife or eligible for a 1D1 tax valuation would be considered eligible for to apply for a grant under this program. The other thing that's not spelled out in statute, although we did discuss this briefly in our first council meeting, is whether or not the project would cover ancillary project costs. And we consider those to be due diligence costs, such as appraisals, surveys, phase one environmental reports, title policies, monitoring endowments, related costs, and closing costs, which can include, of course, some attorney's fees, recording fees, things like that. Staff recommends that the council do approve that those costs be eligible. In some programs, they are not eligible. But in many cases, especially where land trust NGOs are involved, the ability to seek funding to cover those costs can make the difference between a project being viable and not being viable. In many cases, a landowner, for example, is willing to donate or contribute a bargain sale of a conservation easement, but somebody somewhere has to come up with the $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 to cover those appraisal costs, survey costs, and so forth. and in many cases the landowner is not in a position to assume that burden, and neither is the NGO. So staff does feel like being able to include those costs increases the versatility of this program. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Is there any discussion by council members? No one has signed up to speak. Any other comments? Then I'll entertain a motion for approval.
There's the motion up there.
There's the motion.
Second.
Yeah.
Do you want to read into the record? Would you like it read into the record?
Okay. The staff does recommend that the council adopt the following motion. The council authorizes staff to accept and rank grant applications from any qualified easement holder for lands covered by Section 1D1 ad valorem tax valuations. The council furthermore authorizes staff to consider and recommend to the council project grants that include payment of ancillary project costs.
Now I'll entertain them.
I'll move.
Second.
Any opposed? It carries. Item number three, the overview of the Texas Farm and Ranch Lands Conservation Program grant ranking process. Justin, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, council members. For the record, my name is Justin Drivables. I'm the Private Lands and Public Hunting Program Director here at Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. I'd like to take just a minute to give you an overview of the ranking process that took place with our ranking committee. A little bit of background. As you know, we had a shorter application period this year for a number of reasons. Opened January 29th and went through February 19th. We had 12 complete applications that we received during this time period, and all these applications were evaluated by a five-member ranking committee here at Parks and Wildlife. Here's the committee membership. We have Tim Birdsong from Inland Fisheries, myself and Jeff Roche from the Wildlife Division, and then Ted Hollingsworth and Corky Kuhlman from Land Conservation Program. Process. We met on February 22nd in the Land Conservation Program offices. We reviewed all 12 applications in alphabetical order. They showed up on a large screen, and we reviewed them as a group. Each member gave a numerical score for each one of the grading criteria that was approved by this body at your last meeting. We did that independently and did not compare scores. As we went through the projects, we talked about pros and cons of each project. Different subject matter experts would chime in with input on priority watersheds, priority species, things of that nature. We, as I said, independently scored each one of these projects and did not discuss those rankings or scores until the end after the results have been tabulated. There's the group in action. And at the end of the day, we were very pleased that all five members were unanimous in their numerical ranking of the top five projects. Obviously, the numbers shifted a little bit here and there depending on the score, but the top five projects surfaced, and we're happy to bring you those recommendations here shortly. So at this time, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
No questions? And we'll move on to action item number four. Consideration by council of staff recommendations to award grants for conservation easement projects. Mr. Ted Hollingsworth.
Chairman, members of the council, good morning. My name is Ted Hollingsworth. I'm with the Land Conservation Program here at Texas Parks and Wildlife. As Justin mentioned, we received 12 applications. I want to say, want to reiterate that we were extremely pleased to see that many applicants, qualified applicants, and applications, nine different governmental, non-governmental organizations represented, projects from 10 different counties across the state. And these were all worthwhile projects. Any of these projects would have warranted would have warranted funding and protection under conservation easements. The projects range in size from 144 acres up to 9,992 acres. Applications requested a total of a little over $4 million to complete projects valued at a little over $20 million. So the average leverage was 4-1 for these applications, which we were extremely, extremely pleased. And it would have placed conservation, had we funded all 12, would have placed conservation easements on 17,471 acres. Projects covered a variety of working land, types of working lands, including cattle ranches, mixed-use properties, rice farms, and crayfish farms. Habitats range from high desert grasslands in West Texas to hill country springs to tidal wetlands down on the coastal bend. So a nice, nice diversity of projects. We were very, very pleased to see that diversity. This map shows has a star representing the location of each of those projects. As you can see, a little bit of a concentration on the coast, but much of the state represented. Just want to review very quickly the selection criteria. Threat of development or other conversion of productive working lands scored potentially up to 20 points. The value or cost effectiveness of the project potentially up to 20 points. Watershed value, watershed flood abatement, water quality issues up to 20 points. Fish and wildlife value up to 20 points. Contribution to a conservation landscape where there are already protected lands up to 10 points. And then the terms, the specific terms, how protective that conservation, proposed conservation easement would be, up to 10 points. And with this, I want to go through the projects one by one, starting with the project that ranked number one, and then we'll go through all 12. We'll start with the project that ranked the highest. This is a project called the West Bay Corridor Project. A lot of people know it as the Hitchcock Prairie. There are, not long ago, were many, many, many thousands of acres of coastal tallgrass prairie outside of Hitchcock, Texas, located between West Galveston Bay and Highway 2004. Much of that is in conservation now. The Brazoria Wildlife Refuge, National Wildlife Refuge, managed to secure quite a bit of that. But there's still some large tracts remaining, and the most significant tract, conservationists consider the most significant tract, is the Hitchcock Prairie, which has been in the targets of the been in the bullseye of the conservation community and along the coast for probably 20 years now. We've been trying to figure out how to get this property into conservation. Very diverse, a lot of wet prairie, some upland prairies, a lot of spartina prairies, some pothole wetlands, and a lot of frontage on marshes and bays that are part of West Bay. Of Galveston Bay. It's not contiguous with Brazoria Refuge, but it's very close. $500,000 was requested, which represents about 12% of the project value, or about $161 per acre. There is a caveat on this one, and that is that there is either a QIPRA or an ACA, and I apologize, I forget. I believe it's a QIPRA grant. Pending that provides $1 million of this project money, and that money will go away at the end of this fiscal year. So staff would recommend if you decide to fund this project, that it be contingent on being able to close in this fiscal year. And if not, then that $500,000 would be returned to the fund and be available for other projects. You can see from the pictures a lot of wetlands, a lot of emergent marshes, a lot of low prairie, and not a lot of Chinese tallow, not a lot of encroachment by exotic species here. Just a really, really wonderful biological asset, and in a place that's, of course, in Galveston County, subject to being broken up and subdivided and developed in the future. If anyone has any questions about any one of these specific projects as I go through them, please just speak up and ask. Otherwise, I'm going to proceed. Yes, sir.
This thing, I'm going to push this thing.
Oh, it's on all the time.
Ted, I was just wondering, there's that separate tract up, I guess, north and a little bit east of the main tract?
What, yes, sir.
How does that work?
That's part of the 3,100 acre that the owner holds, and it would also go under conservation easement.
Do you know about the size of that piece of the total?
No,
it doesn't appear to be much.
No, we just have to estimate that. It looks like maybe a couple hundred acres.
Yeah. No, that's about 70. I'm affiliated with San Calistin. It's about 75 acres, I think. It's relatively small. It does have legal access to it, so it's okay, but it doesn't make easement.
Mr. Hollingsworth, a quick question or more of a comment. And this information was provided to council members, which I appreciate. But as you go through each item, could you reference who the applicant is? In this case, Scenic Galveston.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. I'd be happy to do that.
On the slides, it gives the name of the project, but did not specify who put in the application. I think that would be helpful.
Very good. I will add that information. In this case, it is Scenic Galveston, Inc. The project that scored second is the Per Year Ranch Project, 425 acres in West Travis County, mature oak juniper woodlands and savannas, the headwaters of Rocky Creek, which is a major tributary of Barton Creek. It is adjacent to the Shield Ranch, which is a 6,700-acre ranch protected by a conservation easement. $131,850 was requested, which is 2.3% of the project value, or $310 per acre. Very, very, very highly leveraged project. The applicant is Hill Country Conservancy. As you can see, it's in southwest Travis County. And I apologize, the quality of the maps varies some from presentation to presentation. We had a limited time to get all this together for today's meeting, but as you can see, it is very close to the Hays County line. And if you can read the topo map, you can see that Rocky Creek basically starts along the southern boundary of that tract, and then it leaves that tract and enters Barton Creek. Mature habitat for a golden cheek warbler, high fish and wildlife value, and this one scored second by the team. Be happy to answer any questions about the Per Year Ranch.
Any significant improvements on this property? Lots of houses, or
There's a single home. In fact, you can see it sort of on the topo map in the southeast corner of that property. There is a residence.
Do they hold the easement as well on the Shield Ranch? You know?
That I do not know.
Thank you.
Okay, let me just ask a question. In this case, it's the Hill Country Conservancy, and there was an appraisal. And that appraisal, was that done by the Conservancy to arrive at the value of the total value of the easement?
In most cases, the actual formal appraisal has not been done just because of the cost, and I don't recall from memory on all 12 of these which have a formal easement. In every case, though, these trusts are very responsible to seek out a local broker who can provide a good market estimate of that value. So it could be that the actual value will change when an appraisal is done. If an appraisal has not been done, and like I say, I don't remember from project to project which ones have completed those appraisals.
I'm just trying to work through the process. So this could be an estimate of, I came up with $13,310 an acre for the total project value.
Yes, sir. That could be an estimate.
Okay. So when it gets approved, if it doesn't have an estimate, then the land trust will go out and get a qualified appraisal to give us a hard dollar value on the project value.
That's correct. And before we can enter into a contract under the protocol we have in place. We can enter into a contract, but no funds would be disbursed until we have that completed appraisal.
Okay, thank you.
Ed, is the on the per your ranch, is this value the before value when you consider before versus after the easement?
This is the after value. This is the actual value of the conservation easement.
Okay.
Yes, sir. In every case, we provided the value that we show in each of these slides is the value of the conservation easement. In many cases, we're not even provided with the estimated value of a fee simple estate. And as you can see, it's scenic rolling hill country and it is a very pretty creek, a live water creek, again, that feeds into Barton Creek, which is a critical component of the watershed. So,
let me kind of re-ask my question that I'd asked earlier, maybe a little different way. The home that's on it, this isn't just throw a number. This isn't a $5 million house or something like that, or where we've got a significant, where we're potentially putting an easement on a recreational property for someone. And part of what's prompting my question is just the sheer size of the, mm-hmm. of the track itself.
It's an 1,800 square foot home. And I believe, and again, I can look this up. I have all the information here. I believe that in their answers regarding the conservation easement itself, they are requesting the right to build one additional home on the property. Yes, to build one additional home on the property.
Ed, what is the program that Travis County has that they're contributing $2.5 million?
If you don't mind, I'm gonna ask Jeff Francell if he can address that. I'm not really up on the various Travis County.
I'll speak to that. I'm Craig Davis with Hill Country Conservancy.
Thank you all for consideration of this project and for volunteering for this. Travis County has a conservation easement program. I believe there were $8 million funded through the program, so we've been confirmed for an award for $2.5 million. To speak to the homes, I think it's important to note that the landowners have requested the right to four additional homes, but within a five-acre building envelope in proximity to the existing home. So it'll be a very contained envelope, and outside of that, there won't be any significant development of any sort. There will be an agricultural envelope as well, but that's strictly for agricultural purposes.
What is the size of the agricultural envelope?
We're discussing a two-acre envelope is the current plan. The largest I could ever see it being would be 5 acres. We usually consider 2 acres to be sufficient, but it depends on the site. And those are always away from sensitive areas such as creeks, slopes, endangered species habitat, caves, things like that.
And what type of ag operation is going to occur in 2 to 5 acres?
Well, that's for the for barns and infrastructure and the like. So, if they want to have sheds for hay and anything like that, then those types of buildings will be within that agricultural envelope. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, Ted, that brings up, I think, another question for me, and that is, what are the terms of these easements? Are they all perpetual, or do we have some that are 15 years? And or have you?
Right, the statute requires that the easement be a minimum of 30 years. In this case, all 12 applicants were for perpetual. All 12 applications were for perpetual easements.
But you sound like you're still, or the land trust is still negotiating some of the issues on the terms of these easements. Did I
Yes, sir, and that really is standard operating procedure. The negotiation of the conservation easement, the details in the conservation easement, can be fairly time consuming, and so what we see is the basic parameters of that easement. No subdivision of the property. In this case, a 5-building envelope with up to 4 additional homes on it, and a 2-acre building envelope for agricultural buildings. We see those fundamental premises of the conservation easement, but the real details get fleshed out once an award is made. Most land trusts and most landowners don't want to go to that time and trouble, and there's often attorneys involved and costs involved, unless they're fairly confident they have funding coming. Parks and Wildlife will have a team assembled that will review those conservation easements very carefully to make sure that they're consistent with what was in the application and consistent with the intent of the program to protect working lands and maximize the long-term fish and wildlife value of those lands.
Okay, thanks. Everybody comfortable with that? Okay, proceed.
The All Britton Ranch is 650 acres. It's in Bandera County, west central Bandera County. It's right in the heart of the Bandera Canyon lands, and it is pretty much all mature oak juniper forest, very, very dramatic topography. There are some canyons with big tooth maple. Those are those maples that that we all know from the state park, from Lost Maple State Park, that turn bright red in the fall. Those are remnant populations of those maples, and occupied habitat for both golden cheek warbler and black cap vireo on this property. It is near Lost Maple State Park and Love Creek Preserve. There is an effort underway to conserve as much of that Bandera Canyonland country as possible. There are a number of endemic species, including some federally listed species. A lot of that country, including the All Britton Ranch, have important springs and creeks on them. That's sort of a focal area for a conservation effort for the state of Texas because of the number of endemic species that occur there. The request is for $325,000, which is 33% of the project value. It comes to $500 an acre. And the All Britton Ranch and the applicant here is the Nature Conservancy, and they did get in a request to NRCS for NRCS funding for the current cycle. So this is brought to the council predicated on the assumption that there would be a $650,000 match in NRCS funds. In this slide, you can see the proximity to the Love Creek Preserve and the Lost Maple State Park. The entire tract is actually larger. The landowners are proposing to put a conservation easement on the eastern third of the ranch, or 650 acres. You can see from the topo map that it's rugged country, that there's a significant canyon there. Again, with live springs, perennial springs on that property, that is completely vegetated, and it is habitat for endangered and state-listed species.
By when would the NRCS match have to be made for this to move forward? You said it was contingent on an NRCS match.
If the council instructs staff to proceed with a grant for the All Britton Ranch, just before the end of this week, we'll prepare a letter and forward it to NRCS stating that the council has made that commitment. NRCS, I believe within a couple of weeks, will confirm that they have approved that grant to make that match. And then we would proceed to, there will be a contract between NRCS and the applicant and a contract between the council or the program and the applicant, so we'll know in very short order that that's confirmed.
And if for some reason it were not, the match did not occur, the money would go back to the program and be made available for future applicants.
That's correct. Yes, sir.
So, Ted, this is not a donated easement, then?
That's correct. Okay. Yes, sir. And you can see from the pictures that I don't know that that's a named creek, but the creek in that canyon is a pretty clear water creek, and you can get an idea of that again that classic hill country topography. I'm sorry. Are there any other comments or questions?
The All Britons are donating. I don't know if it's a donated sale. I assume it is $325,000 towards this. Is that correct?
The request is for $325,000, yes.
And that's from the landowner?
That would be matched with $325,000, with a bargain sale, $325,000 off of the appraised value from the landowner,
okay.
And $650,000 from NRCS.
Okay. The landowner is
kicking in.
So it's a 25% bargain sale. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And each of the NRCS applied projects that we'll see today include a 25% bargain sale from the landowner.
Thank you.
The Pietila Ranch?
Patella.
The Patella Ranch. I've been wanting to ask you that all week. The Patella Ranch in Culberson County is 9,992 acres. It's high desert grasslands. The elevation ranges between 5,000 and 6,000 feet. Headwaters for McKittrick Creek, and anyone that's been out to the Guadalupe Mountains National Park has probably taken that hike up to McKittrick Creek, and a very, very, very significant perennial source of water for that otherwise very dry desert country. 6 miles of boundary in common between the Patella Ranch and Guadalupe Mountains National Park. $375,000 is requested. Total project value $1.125 million. This would be matched with $650,000 in NRCS, and is the balance of that landowner contribution?
Yes.
The balance of that is landowner contribution, so it is a significant bargain sale of the conservation easement. The request comes to $38 per acre. You can see from this map that all of the sections involved are not contiguous. There is a significant block of contiguous tracts adjacent to the Guadalupe Mountains, and then there are some tracts that are not contiguous. The committee determined that all of these tracts have high fish and wildlife value. Again, they range between about 5,000 and 6,000 feet in elevation, and have very significant value. Not just for McKittrick Creek, but for a range of species that occupy those high grasslands in West Texas that are endemic or at least unique to those high grasslands of New Mexico and West Texas.
And each tract does have legal access, right?
Jeff, does each tract have legal access?
Yes.
Who owns the tracts that are, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Same question.
Go ahead.
Is this also Nature Conservancy?
Yeah, the applicant is Nature Conservancy, I'm sorry.
Who owns the tracts that are outside, that are not included?
Various private landowners.
Okay. And is there, are we concerned about development in this area, or someone's going to purchase this property and develop it?
The risk is relatively low. In fact, this project scored very well in spite of the fact that it scored essentially nothing for risk. This is some beautiful country, and there are some ranches. Access in general is not very good. Very little development occurring in Culberson County, and although the risk is low, the opportunities to conserve fish and wildlife values were very high, which is the reason this project ranked as well as it did.
Ed, what is the mineral status? Who owns the minerals under this tract?
Jeff, do you have that off the top of your head? Or
the current owner has some.
Jeff Ransell, Nature Conservancy. The current owner has some minerals, but not all of the property. In fact, not the majority. But I would address the development threat. If you've driven into McKittrick Canyon, the road into the national park goes through this properties, the sections that are there butted up against the park. So I think there is the potential that someone could buy that property at some point and subdivide it, and based on the public paved road that goes to the national park.
Any other questions? Okay, Ted, go on.
The next project according to the ranking, the next project is the Lazy Bend Ranch, which is 144 acres in Hays County. This particular tract is subject to intense development pressure. Would be a very likely candidate for a subdivision. It's Edwards Plateau Savanna and Oak Juniper Woodlands, including occupied Golden Cheek Warbler habitat. It's not adjacent, but it's very near, as I recall, a few hundred yards from the 3,950-acre Storm Ranch conservation easement. The applicant on this one is the Hill Country Conservancy, and they do have a concerted effort underway to try to combine or try to connect these conservation easement areas in that area of Hays County for the benefit of the warbler and, of course, a number of other species that are unique to Edwards Plateau Savanna and Oak Juniper Woodlands. 75,925 acres is requested, which is 7% of the project value, $527 per acre. This is a bargain sale, so the project is very highly leveraged. And in this map, you can see in general where it is. The bright green blob, it's the red spot, but the bright green blob just to the east of that is the Storm Ranch. You can also see from all of the streets and roads in this area that undeveloped tracts of that size are becoming quite uncommon in Hays County. And the habitat on this particular tract is mature and healthy, and the team felt it would be a worthwhile piece of property to preserve under conservation easement.
Are there any improvements on this tract?
There is a 1,500 square foot barn on the tract.
Request for provisions to build additional.
These fillable forms write very, very, very tiny if you put too many letters in them. There's a request for a small building envelope for a guest house.
Is this a smaller part of a larger tract owned by this landowner then?
I don't believe. Let me see.
If I may, I'll be happy to fill in again. Frank Davis, Hill Country Conservancy. So this is the only tract that the owners own. They've owned this tract for about 25 years. They bought the tract and have done nothing but care for the fish and wildlife on the property since obtaining it. I think it's worth mentioning that it's a donated conservation easement. They're not going to receive any cash for the value of the conservation easement, so it's a very charitable project. There's one home on the property that's 1,000 square feet, maybe. It's very modest. And they'd like to reserve the right to a guest home within a same envelope of 2 acres. There's one barn that contains a solar array and carries rainwater, collects rainwater. And those are all the improvements on the property.
Thank you. Any other questions on this project? OK, Okay, let's move on.
So those are the top five ranked projects, and we're pausing at this point only to say that if the council were to decide to fund projects in the order in which the team ranked them, these would be the five that could be fully funded by the available funding. They would protect 14,311 acres. The total combined request for funds from the program would be $1.407 million. The total combined project value, again, estimated value, a little over $13 million. If the council were to decide to fund those and fund those only, there would be a fund balance of roughly $480,000, less operating costs. And operating costs for the program are minimal. That includes the pads and the packages, the information, the stuff. So it's a modest amount would come out of that to cover those costs. And combined with $112,000 that becomes available to the program September 1, that would leave roughly $590,000 that could be granted in a future grant cycle under the program. But again, that's only if the council decides to fund these five projects and these five projects only. You can see from this map where those projects are located, and those first five projects, those are the yellow stars. You'll see the sixth project, which is the blue star, and then the other seven projects are the red stars on this map. Hufson Lakes Ranch, ranked number six. It's 908 acres. It's in Calhoun County. It is very low. It's wet prairie, extensive tidal wetlands, including emergent tidal marsh. The request is for $715,000. It was the largest single request that we received, roughly half of the project value, or $787 per acre. There is a pending North American Wetlands Conservation Act grant, a NACA grant, that has been applied for but not awarded yet. So this application is predicated on the assumption that the North American Wetlands Conservation Act grant would be approved. This is sort of a band of property that surrounds a tidal lake and some tidal marshes with frontage on Matagorda Bay, the bay that's Karankawa Bay to the east. I'm sorry, to the west, but the bay to the south is Matagorda Bay. That lake is tidally connected to the bay through a bayou. And the owners actually own that adjacent undeveloped land, but are proposing to put a conservation easement only on a band of land that would protect that lake and those marshes.
Who's the applicant, Ted?
I'm sorry, the applicant on that one is the Colorado River Land Trust.
Is that the same as the LCRA Land Trust?
Yes, that is the nonprofit organization that supports their projects. Yes.
Are these whipping cranes in the picture here?
No, those are wood storks.
Wood storks.
Yes, sir. Any questions about the Hufson Ranch? The project at rank number seven is Austin Bio Farms. The applicant is the Galveston Bay Foundation. This is a 600-acre tract in Brazoria County. Has 3 miles of frontage on Austin Bio, with a narrow riparian corridor along that bio, and then the remainder of the property is in native and improved pastures. It is adjacent to the Savannah Oaks and Lone Pine Farm conservation easement, so it is part of an effort to conserve some of that pasture country and that Austin Bio corridor. $400,000 is requested, which is half of the project value, $667 an acre. As of this point, the project match has not been identified by the Galveston Bay Foundation. If they were to receive funding through this project, they would have to go out and seek the match for it. That's the polygon in red at the bottom of that map, and then the other, the sort of beige-colored properties are the Savannah Oaks and Lake Pine properties, which are already under conservation easement. You can see where that is, just a mile or so from the Brazoria County Wildlife Refuge in Brazoria County. Any questions? The next project, ranked number 8 by the team, is the Dreamcatcher Ranch, 211 acres in Hays County. Tremendous potential for development, a great deal of risk to this ranch. It's a classic sort of rolling hill country, Hays County rolling hill country, largely native pasture and some improved pasture. There's a pivot irrigation system on a portion of it. There are patches of native oak juniper woodlands on the property. There are karst features on the property, so it does have recharge value. Located 100 yards from the San Marcos city limits and 1.5 miles northwest of Spring Lake in the Edwards Aquifer Recharge Zone, $378,000 is requested, which is 11% of the project value. This would be a very highly leveraged project. They have applied for an NRCS match to complete the funding. There is a couple million dollars in other funding that has also been made available through other sources, and I believe we have somebody here that can speak to that if you like. Apologize for the contrast on this map, but the Dreamcatcher Ranch is outlined in yellow. Spring Lake is that sort of T-shaped lake that's, like I say, a little more than a mile south of the Dreamcatcher Ranch. And you can see San Marcos is sprawling rapidly towards the Dreamcatcher Ranch. Are there any questions? Yes, ma'am.
With a significant potential for development, why did this one rank so much lower than the others?
I'm sorry. The reason this one did not rank any more highly than it did is because the committee had a difficult time on the basis of the application establishing the watershed value of that. Although the application stated the watershed it was in, there are roads on all sides. We could not really determine the water quality and watershed values of the project. And it was also unclear from the application the fish and wildlife value. And I think this application, again, the window for application was very short. We did not have a good map of the ranch and were unable to determine how much of the ranch was in pasture and how much of it was in oak juniper woodlands. And for that reason, it was difficult for us to score it. Had we had more information, just to be candid with the council, had we more information at the time, I suspect the project would have gotten more points both for watershed value and for fish and wildlife value.
And who is the applicant?
The applicant for this one is the Guadalupe Blanco River Trust. And I would just add, for the benefit of the council, that at $378,000 requested, the council could grant the first 5 projects in toto and fund this project as well. And I believe, and again, there are people here today that can speak to this, but I believe all of the match is accounted for this project,
including the NRCS.
This would be contingent upon NRCS. Yes, sir.
Ted, just for clarification, this application, they have been approved.
They are approved. Okay. The NRCS match is approved. So again, this one very highly leveraged, a very high risk, property, and funding would be available should the council choose to do so to fund this one. The Javelina Ranch is 280 acres in Hidalgo County. Significant potential for development. As anyone has been to the valley recently knows, all those remaining undeveloped brush tracts, there are not a lot of them, and those that do remain are all subject to development. It is the entire tract is mature thorn scrub habitat with a few small pothole wetlands on it. Numerous species of concern on this tract, including the Texas horned lizard, indigo snake, reticulated collared lizard, Texas tortoise. Those are all state-listed species. Almost $670,000 is requested, which is basically the entire project value is requested from the council. You can see from this map that it's adjacent to some other undeveloped properties, but you can also see that immediately to the south and immediately to the east there are significant developments taking place.
Who's the applicant?
I'm so sorry. The applicant for this one is the Valley Land Fund. Are there any questions? Okay, the next project is the Spoonbills Ranch project. The applicant is Texas Rice Industry Coalition for the Environment, known as Texas Rice. This one is in Matagorda County, 192 acres of mature live oak forest. The balance is in hay fields, constructed wetlands, rice, sorghum, corn, soybeans in rotation. It's a fairly typical Matagorda County rice rotation operation. 17 miles west of Bay City. It's adjacent to a tract, 175-acre tract that's already under conservation easement. It was funded by CAP through this program, through the Texas Farm and Ranch Land Conservation Program, when the program was under the GLO. $134,500 is requested, which is 67% of the project value, or $442 an acre. It is a bargain sale. And you can see from this slide where it is relative to Bay City, where it is in the county, and you can get an idea for how much of that is in conventional farming operation and how much of it is in live oak forest. The Oyster Bio Project is 480 acres in Chambers County. It's rotational rice farming, except for a narrow corridor of riparian habitat along Oyster Bio. It's very near the entrance to Anahuac National Wildlife Refuge. $320,000 is requested, which is 50% of the project value. The project match has not been identified. The applicant for this one is the Galveston Bay Foundation. If it were awarded fund, then the Galveston Bay Foundation would begin to seek the matching $320,000 to complete the project. You can see from this picture is a very, very, very narrow riparian corridor, and otherwise it's in traditional rotational rice farming there in Chambers County.
Is that Oyster Bio one of the boundaries? Is that the east boundary?
Yes, sir, that's correct. The last project, and when I say last, I don't mean it's an unworthy project. It's just that we had very, very, very competitive project applications and very good projects. And the project that ranked number 12 is the Blue Wing Farms project, 377 acres in Brazoria County. The entire property basically is shallow ponds. I believe they started out as rice ponds, but they're now used for crayfish farming. There's a small area not in ponds that is used for hay production. Some of the levees between these ponds have trees on them that provide rookeries for birds, habitat for birds in the area. It's located within the Texas Midcoast Initiative, which is just a large area where there's some interest from conservation groups, including Ducks Unlimited, to try and conserve some of these wetland properties, including rice farms, for migratory waterfowl and for shortened wading birds. It's 4.5 miles from the Brazoria National Wildlife Refuge. $63,000 is requested, which is 20% of the project value, and the balance of that would be in the form of a bargain sale. Again, you can see from this picture that the majority of that property is in traditional levied ponds for, in this case, crayfish farming. And that wraps up my presentation of the 12 applications that were received. Be happy to entertain any additional questions.
How did you handle mineral ownership on all of these? I'm just curious as to, from a conservation easement issue and surface use, et cetera, how was that considered in the application?
Yes, sir. Although we have some information about mineral ownership, very few of these properties, the landowners retained any mineral ownership. And so our approach is similar to the approach we have on department lands, which is that there's always the potential for oil and gas exploration and development. Because of the presence of the conservation easement and because of the presence of a land trust that's working closely with the landowner, we have to assume that a surface use agreement is going to be negotiated that's going to provide as much protection as possible. A typical conventional oil and gas pad these days is 3 to 4 acres. A frac pad, conventional frac pad, is 7 to 8 acres. And out of a 1,000-acre property, if you have a couple of pads, that is an impact, but it's not so profound an impact as to significantly diminish those fish and wildlife values. So we didn't really have a way to take that into account. None of these projects, it turns out, are in areas that are currently undergoing rapid exploration and development for oil and gas. So, although I don't have a crystal ball, we assume that the risk of oil and gas development is approximately equal across all of these. So we didn't have a scoring criteria for oil and gas as such.
But the appraiser will take into consideration if there's designated pads versus no designated pads, I would assume.
In the development of the conservation easement, if a landowner were to have executive rights or to have all of the mineral interests, it's assumed that there will be no surface occupancy for oil and gas. If there is, that would certainly be taken into account.
Yeah, assuming he has them.
Yeah, assuming he has. And I'm not aware that any of the applicants have executive rights or all of the minerals on these properties.
Ted, I have two questions, actually. The first one is the top-ranking application, the Hitchcock Prairie, was $500,000 contingent upon closing this fiscal year, whether it be October or September. That's this early aggressive timeline to close, just from my experience. If that project does not close, you said those funds come back to the council?
That's correct.
Will those funds be available to go further down the list this year, or will they be held for next year's cycle?
Well, they would be available that's at the discretion of the council. The council could direct staff to fund the next available project if funds become available. Just to jump ahead a little bit, staff is going to recommend that we reopen the application period going forward and try to award, go through another grant cycle and make more awards before the end of this year, just to give applicants as much time as possible. The issue with the Hitchcock Prairie is that this project has been underway for a couple of years now, and Scenic Galveston is confident that they're close to closing. So they make this request, again, predicated on the assumption that they're going to be able to close in the next few months.
Second question is there any, has there been any discussion or thought for Parks and Wildlife staff to make site visits to these properties that the council recommends to fund? I know from our side, from NRCS's program side, you know, we actually confirm the application and the evaluation based on site visit from staff. Is that something that the staff here has discussed?
Absolutely. And quite frankly, had we a longer period had the application period been open for 8 weeks, and had we had a month to prepare this coming before the council, we would have visited the top-ranking projects. That was something we had intended to do going into the project, and based on your comment, I would certainly think it appropriate that any of these that the council recommends for funding, we do have a staff visit just to make sure that we don't get on the ground and find any red flags that were not evident from the application.
Good. Any other questions?
If you should find a red flag, what would be the procedure then?
The procedure would be to communicate that back to the chairman, and that the chairman could determine whether to contact the council members. And from a legal standpoint, Mr. Sweeney may have a legally correct answer, but if the staff were to find something that was of concern, we would certainly notify the chairman and ask for guidance from the chairman.
Right. Thanks, Ted. I guess my response to that would be these grant awards are all contingent on reaching an appropriate contract that's sufficiently protective of the investment that the state would be making. And if we found out in the course of it that we couldn't do that, then we would not complete the award process through the grant or complete the payment. It may be something that could be worked around in the contract. It may not be. We'd have to see. It would depend on the nature of the issue.
Yes,
Mr. Chairman. Just a question back to some comments that you had made regarding somebody that could elaborate on specifically the Dreamcatcher Ranch that might have some additional information about it. And really where I'm headed with that is the fact that it was out of the, it potentially could get funded. I kind of heard signs that maybe the application, maybe due to the short timeline we had, some of that, which couldn't be helped in a lot of ways. That being said, if we gave it more time to be talked through, is it something that we might want to consider? Because when I look at the applications, and in particular that one, and I compare it back to the other property that's fairly small in acreage size, you know, at the end of the day, my question is which one has potentially, you know, better usage of our funds from an encroachment of San Marcos, because we're sitting right there on the edge of it, or a Texas Hill Country property that's subject to development for houses down the road and all the things that go on in that area on projects that are otherwise not real different on paper, except for the sheer size of the projects in terms of the dollar value. Any comments?
I think that's a very fair assessment. The short application period made things a little bit awkward for the selection team. The Dreamcatcher Ranch, probably of all the applications, suffered from that short turnaround period, just to be very candid. And I believe we have one or two people here today to represent that project who've signed up to speak. And the council certainly has the discretion to move that one up and fund it if the council should choose to do so.
Okay, we'll talk about it.
Can we at least hear a little more about the property?
I think we've got a speaker here.
Sorry.
He's going to talk about it.
Okay. I guess you suggested perhaps opening the process back up for applications. If that were the case, couldn't you encourage the folks that didn't rank to resubmit?
Absolutely. In fact, we have let everyone know who submitted an application that, assuming we have another cycle this year, their applications are submitted. They will be considered unless they withdraw them, but they would have that time to add information, to improve the quality of the application, to provide more information. Yes, sir.
All right. Any other questions? I guess we'll go to Andy. You're signed up to speak, and I assume it's on Dreamcatcher.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman and members of the council, my name is Andrew Santum. I work at Texas State University. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you very briefly today. I also must tell you how much I appreciate what you're doing. In my mind, the biggest single terrestrial environmental problem that we face in Texas is the continued breakup of family working lands. And so to the extent that you are contributing to that, to slow that inexorable fragmentation, all Texans are grateful. My purpose here today is to speak in favor of the Dreamcatcher Ranch, and I apologize on behalf of the Guadalupe Blanco River Land Trust, which is the applicant, that we apparently did not get you all the information you needed. No one respects the staff of this agency more than I, and I appreciate the fact that we did get feedback, and I believe that many of the questions that came up were answered, but it was after your agenda was posted. My summary is this is a working cattle ranch within 100 yards of the city of San Marcos, which is the fastest growing middle-sized city in the United States. It is directly in the floodplain that was responsible for the tremendous floods on the San Marcos River that we had in October. It is subject to this entire area, which is along Sink Creek, which it brings the floodwater down to the headwaters of the San Marcos River. It will be developed unless actions like the one you're contemplating are taken. With respect to wildlife, there are 8 federally listed endangered or threatened species in Spring Lake. So it is one of the most important fish and wildlife areas in the state with respect to wildlife diversity and threat. So I commend the staff on the projects that were sort of above the line, but I would also urge you strongly to, because this project is approved and it has also attracted additional philanthropic funding. And so it would be matched about 9-1. So if you could find your way to reach down and make it possible, it would be a tremendous benefit, not only to the agricultural operations that are taking place there, but to the endangered species and the citizens of San Marcos. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Andy. Raises some questions. If we do reach down that and none of the other projects develop any hitches, then we basically spend all our money.
We will have spent within about $100,000 of the yes. 16 funds.
So I guess I want to hear what their feeling is. It looks like we either approve the first 5, reopen the process, let the Dreamcatcher Ranch submit any additional information that's needed, and see where it ranks along with any of the other new projects that may show up. This is a little bit of a rushed process, which I think everybody's voiced a little concern about. But I'll look for guidance from the council.
Ted, I've got a question for you. And I didn't make the last meeting, so there may be some things I missed. But if we've got a certain pile of money allocated to do these projects, why would we not rank those all the way down through 6, 7, whatever it is, 6, I guess, in this case, and expend those funds for the purpose intended? Why don't we shut it off at 5 and not pick up 6?
Well, that's exactly what we've done. If you fund until you run out of money,
right,
you'll fund the first 5 projects.
But you just said we had money to do 6.
That's correct. But project number 6 was a request for $715,000, and there would only be $400,000 remaining.
Okay.
So it would be possible to contact the applicant for that project and see if they could close the project with $350,000 or $400,000, or it would be possible to skip that project and fund another project in full. That's at the discretion of the council. Okay. But the reason for the first 5 is because there's not enough money to fund number 6.
But it would be to pick up the Dreamcatcher.
Yes, sir.
We could actually get 6 projects.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Is there any staff here that could speak to any of the additional information that the Dreamcatcher gave them?
Yes, ma'am, I can do that.
We had requests from several of our applicants to submit additional documentation after the close of the application period. I told all of them the same thing, which was that we could not consider that. We couldn't go back and rechange the score. We couldn't reconvene the committee. But that if anybody provided information, I would read it so that I could provide the most accurate, most factual information to the council this morning. And I'm confident that, at least for my scoring, the Dreamcatcher Ranch would have scored more highly had the additional information that was provided, again, about the watershed issues, the watershed values. Andy mentioned a couple things that were not evident in the contract, in the application. For example, the fact that during extreme floods, that property's part of Spring Lake during extreme flood events. It does drain into Spring Lake. There are karst features that are part of the recharge of the Edwards Aquifer on that property. And because we didn't have a map, we did not realize that close to half of that property still has, now a lot of the cedar's been cleared, but it still has oaks and cedars, and there's still some patches of property that clearly have native wildlife value on the property, and we could not determine that from the original application material. So I've read everything that was submitted this is just Ted speaking. I believe the project, I would have scored the project higher had we had that information last Monday when we went through these projects.
And an idea of where it might have ranked?
No, ma'am. I did not try to put points to that, no.
Did you receive any additional information from the Austin Bayou Farm that might have changed their scoring?
No, sir.
In all fairness, looking at the way you scored it off, did you have any additional information come in from the Austin Bayou Farm?
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just for consideration, if this council approved the first five as they are ranked here, would it be possible to open up a new funding cycle and allow the other applicants to either leave their application in as is or allow them time to, you know, to revise it and perhaps set up a second window?
Well, I certainly, in the next action item, we will propose that we do that. If nothing else, we're going to have $112,000 that becomes available September 1.
I have to skip ahead to the next item, but I think it might be relevant to this conversation. If we were to take the recommendation to fund the top five and then move on to the next item, and you'll discuss a schedule moving forward for when we would be considering future projects, what was that timeline going to be, or what would you anticipate that timeline being if we were to do that?
Well, those additional funds become available September 1. Staff would recommend that we have the next application cycle, that we receive those, that we close the cycle, that we rank those, and that we come back to the council prior to September 1 or very close to September 1 so that we can award those funds as soon as they're available to make sure that there's a year and make sure there's as much time as possible because, as Claude can certainly tell you, it can take a while to negotiate the fine details in that conservation easement, to get the survey back, to get the appraisal back, to get all the due diligence done and close a project. So we would recommend, you know, not much later than September 1, awarding all the rest of the whatever funds are available.
But we don't have to wait till the additional $100,000. But that's what you're proposing, is that right?
That's correct. We would not have to. We could, if there were a few $100,000 left over from this cycle, we could immediately have another cycle. It's a complete discretion of the council.
How much do you estimate that to be if we were not to wait for the 100 or so? Is it around 400,000?
It would be about 475,000.
So if we did want to provide an opportunity for all the applicants to provide more information, but intend to do it in short order so that we can go ahead and get that 400,000 expended. sooner than later, we have the, you believe we have the flexibility to do so?
The council could certainly do that. Yes, sir.
Is there a time constraint on Dreamcatcher and all the additional funding they've received?
With your permission, I'll let Mr. Sansom address that.
Good morning. My name is Carrie Kesnicka, and I'm the Conservation Director for the Guadalupe Blanco River Trust. Thank you so much for your time today. I want to say thank you, and I want to apologize because I wrote the application for GBRT and for Dreamcatcher Ranch, and obviously I didn't do a fantastic job. Part of it is we have gone through the NRCS program, and because we're approved, I've added a lot of supplemental information that would lean upon that information that was already determined. So there's some beautiful maps in there. So although it wasn't part of the application, it was added as a supplement, and I apologize if I put it in the wrong place. But I do appreciate very much your consideration of this. Our deadline is August 31st of this year, and we have worked really hard with a number of partners that are here today, and this is literally the last piece of the puzzle to help this come together. So I very much appreciate your time and trying to consider it, because we feel as though this would really benefit so many different parties and so many different partners. So it would protect a responsible, hardworking ranch. It would also protect the aquifer and the recharge zone, and it also protects wildlife habitat. You're literally checking every box. So thank you very much. But, yes, we are on a pretty tight timeline.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May I speak to the same issue?
My name is Diane Wasinek. I'm with the San Marcos River Foundation, and in a way, we are one of the funders that are involved in the Dreamcatcher Ranch because it's so critical for Spring Lake. The 2,000 acres of watershed flows directly into Spring Lake through this ranch. We have a grant from a foundation that gave us a deadline of April the 10th to prove that we had the rest of the funding. And so that portion of the funding, which is $250,000 grant, applied to the very large NRCS percentage of the funds, is soon to expire. We'll, of course, reapply if we have to, but we don't know if we'll get it next time. Thank you.
Okay, I'm very sympathetic, but maybe somebody else has a solution. My problem is, if we open it up for somebody to give us supplemental information, we need to give everybody that opportunity. But I would like to see a way where we get all the information, we give everybody else the opportunity if they were missing anything, and see where it scores. And if September 1st is, or August 31st is the deadline, let's have another review. I'm just talking out loud here now. Anybody?
Mr. Hollinsworth, how quickly, if the council were to ask you to reopen a window, but limit it to these applications that we have, and ask them to provide additional information, if we wanted it to happen as quickly as possible, but for you still to be able to do your review and get the information that we might be looking for, or the opportunity for these folks to improve, what do you think is a reasonable but expedited timeline for you and your staff to be able to do that?
Well, I would certainly think that if we let all the applicants know that there's a window of opportunity to provide more information, that we could expect to get that information in, say, 2 to 3 weeks. And then give staff a week to take that into account, rescore or re-rank the projects. Certainly in a month's time, we could have that turned around if that's the will of the council.
There were a number of projects that were in the works but didn't meet the deadline, though, weren't there? Or at least one.
I'm aware of one. Yes, sir.
Just one?
Yes, sir.
Which makes me wonder if we shouldn't just open it up for another, with some sort of tight, I don't want to say tight line, deadline, but open it up to just another cycle with the goal of completing it by the end of August. Or sooner, I guess.
Yeah, well, we have two projects that would have to be closed by the end of August. And that would be the West Galveston Bay project and then the Dreamcatcher Ranch, from what
I'm assuming we're going to approve the first five, which will leave us $500,000+, which would allow us to cover all but Javelina Ranch if they whichever one scores the highest.
I need to get clear on what's going to be, if we fund the first five projects, how much money is left over?
We actually have a slide coming up. Let me see if I don't have that information handy.
Do you want to read the motion, put that slide up, and at least get that in the record?
The motion is, and this is staff just drafted this motion as a placeholder, with a clear understanding that the council can modify it any way the council pleases. But the draft motion from staff was that the council awards Texas Farm and Ranch Lands Conservation Program funds in the amounts requested by applications to the top five projects as ranked by staff.
Okay, that's the business before us, and I think we ought to deal with it. Unless there's some more questions, I'm asking for a motion in a second on this.
Well, I guess my question back to you was, if you had this additional information on Dreamcatcher or any of the others and had that ranked, we have no way of knowing if Dreamcatcher might have jumped one of these other five. Is that correct?
And we have no way of knowing if any of the projects would have jumped had we had more information. It's the same with any grant process. The grant ranking team is kind of constrained by what is in the application.
And so I'm curious, when she said she put that somewhere else, that it came with the application?
There was some information that was received later. Now, and again, I had at least one other applicant ask if they could provide additional information, and I told them that they could provide it. It could not be taken into account in the ranking because that had already occurred.
I guess I misunderstood. Did you say it was actually provided with the application, but it was just placed somewhere? I'm not following that. I'm sorry.
Sure. Yes, ma'am, and I'm sorry if I wasn't clear. Because we've gone through the NRCS process, we have an approved easement, we have an approved management plan, we have a number of soil maps and topographic maps, and that is a fairly large, sizable document, so I just attach that. It's part of the application process. The majority of the projects here, although very worthy, haven't gone through that process. They're either not in the NRCS project or program, or they haven't been approved and gone through those steps. We happen to have gone through all those steps, so we have a lot of information for best practices and mapping and how the land is going to be used. So we do have a lot of information that is attached as another document that is part of the application, just not the first 12 questions.
Yeah, but it was provided to us with the application.
Yes, ma'am.
So the staff had access to it at the time they were looking at the application? That's been my question.
Yes, but the goals of the NRCS program are a little different. They're geared towards the agricultural value and use of the property, and as Carrie and Andy alluded to, it's a working cattle ranch, which is important to NRCS. Our criteria were the agricultural value was much less significant under this process, and the value to fish and wildlife and not cattle, was more important, and the value to watershed issues as opposed to agriculture received a higher ranking in our process than it did in the NRCS process. So the fact that the data that was provided to NRCS was also provided to us didn't get us there for our ranking process.
Okay, that's where my confusion was.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Make a motion. I move that the council award Texas Farm and Ranch Lands Conservation Program funds in amounts requested by applicants to the top five projects as ranked by the staff.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes. Now I think we need to deal with, is that under item six? Would that cover us?
Yes, sir. That addresses what to do.
I'm sorry, five.
Yes, sir. That will address what to do with the balance of the funding available.
Shall we move on to five and deal with the balance and how we're going to process the next batch? Is that agreeable to everybody? Okay. Then let's move on to action item number five.
Some of this is just summary background, but as everyone knows, the legislature did appropriate $2 million for this program for this biennium, $1.88 million in this current fiscal year and $112,000 in the fiscal year beginning September 1. Consistent with the motion that was just passed, there is $480,000 remaining. Staff needs to earmark a small amount of that. We've estimated $12,000 to cover the operating costs of the program, leaving close to $470,000 that is currently available. And then effective September 1, another $112,335 becomes available. Staff would recommend that we, in the near future, reopen the application period, consider those applications that are already submitted, and allow folks the opportunity to submit new projects as well, allow applicants the opportunity to upgrade or improve or add information to their existing applications, and that at some point, ideally before September the 1st, this council would meet and award the remaining funds so that the maximum amount of time would be available for applicants to close those projects that were funded by the council.
Could we change that September 1 to
April?
April 1st.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question for just to clarify what this recommendation is to start a new cycle entirely. In theory, we could, the seven projects that have not been funded yet could reapply, but also an applicant that has not, we don't know about yet, could apply for a second cycle. Is that what you are proposing here?
Well, the seven that are in are already in, and any additional applications could be submitted. And you are correct. We don't have to wait until September 1st. September 1st, another $112,000 becomes available, but we could quickly reopen the process, solicit additional information, additional applications, rank and score those, and bring those back to the council anytime the council would like to meet. It could be April, May, June, and award at least $470,000. At that time,
I guess in my mind, I'm saying it's two different scenarios. One, it's not opening up an entirely new cycle, but the council could direct staff to offer to the seven applicants that have already done the work to get this information to us that we have now, some short but additional period of time to supplement with new information, for us to instill cycle number one, be able to consider how we might want to spend the $470,000 that's left right now. That I view that as being separate from what I think that you are planning to propose, which is to completely open up a new cycle altogether and let new people come into play. I think that if we do that, you know, it could be to the disadvantage of the seven that we already have that have already done this work, that didn't have the time on the front end, that had the short, you know, period of time on the front end to get this together. If you were to start a new cycle and let anyone come in at that point.
Yes, sir. The council could certainly so direct that staff reopen the period for the seven projects to submit additional information and instruct staff to reevaluate and re-rank those seven remaining projects and return to the council with that information. Yes, sir.
Chairman, and just to remind council, there is another project that came in after the deadline, which would, at this point, would also be considered? That's a question, not a statement.
It's at the direction of council.
You just had one come in after the deadline.
Yes, sir. We closed the application period on a Friday. We received an email from one of the applicants Friday morning saying they would have the application to us by the end of the day on Friday. That application showed up the following Monday.
Any other questions or comments?
Do you know what the size of the request was of that one?
I know who the applicant was. I don't know any of the details of that project.
Mr. Yes. Chairman, I guess the question that I would have is there's some applications in here, specifically I think the next one in the ranking, that wouldn't fall into the funding level considering the total funds that we're talking about here. My question is, are they allowed to, the seven, to resubmit and or amend these applicants that we have to make them fit? If we're opening it up, they don't have to hold to what they have. They're going to be allowed to add additional information and or change their request amount if they so desire.
I think from the staff standpoint, that would make a lot of sense. If we have an applicant at $715,000 that knows there's only $470,000 and they want to find additional match and come back and make a request for less money, that if we're going to reopen this and give these seven applicants the opportunity to modify their applications, that would be included.
And there may be another project that when people learn there's another cycle, there may be something very attractive that we don't know about might come in. So I don't want to put too quick a trigger on it, or I don't want to limit it to just the people on this list plus the one that came in late. I think we ought to just open it up for another cycle.
Chairman, I really like that idea. The only thing that I would suggest in addition to what you said is that we do keep that opened timeline fairly short and explain that we're doing this because the application period was so short to begin with. That we don't push everybody up against that September date, in particular you and the staff and the people that need funding commitments. That we still try to keep it relatively short, but and that the reason we're doing that is because the application period was short to begin with, and we recognize that.
All right. What's Ted, how long would you, what would the staff need time-wise?
If we were to open that period back up immediately, again, I think another 3 weeks is probably a reasonable 3 to 4 weeks, a reasonable amount of time to solicit additional information. We turned the applications around, you know, in 10 days. That was kind of tight, but if you give the staff 2 weeks, we'll get those scored and ranked and put into a PowerPoint and made available, and we'll be ready to present back to this council. So we're at the beginning of March, so any time after mid-April, I would say we could come back to this council with another set of ranked projects.
How about the end of the last week of April? Everybody check their schedules, and is that a good? That's almost 2 months. So,
staff could meet that deadline if that's what the council desires.
Any comments on that? Does that work for everybody? Then I'd entertain a motion to convene again at the last week in April, subject to everybody's calendar. Make a motion? All right. Second. Commissioner Miller? All right. Thank you. With that, we'll move on to the last item, I believe, which is action item number six, public comment. And no one has signed up to speak, so I guess we're doing our job. Any other comments, suggestions? Please don't hesitate if you have any ideas or questions to contact Ted or me. Or I encourage that.
I have a comment.
Yes, ma'am.
And not a criticism at all by any means, because this was rushed on all parts, applicants, staff, and new council members who are also getting educated. But I would just remind each of us the obvious on the screen there, farm and ranch lands. And we, I heard language here that we're all about, we ranked fish and wildlife over a working ranch. That's not what was intended, but I'm sure that comment was off the cuff, but I think we need to be careful with our scoring that we are upholding the intent of this program.
Yes, ma'am, I appreciate that. The selection criteria are dictated in the statute, and while it does reference the productivity of working lands, it emphasizes threats and emphasizes fish and wildlife and emphasizes water. But that's a point well taken, is that this is a program to conserve working lands. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
All right. Any other issues, comments, suggestions? I have a question, a hand in the back. Please step up to the microphone.
Lise Mason with Scenic Galveston, and on behalf of the Hitchcock Prairie Project, I thank you a lot. I think we're going to finally get this done after about a decade of working on it, I hope. So, thanks.
Thank you. With that...
Chairman?
Yes.
Before we close, I'd like to appeal to every patriotic Texan in the room and wish them all a happy Independence Day.
Thank you. With that, the council has completed its business, and I declare it adjourned. Yes.
Do we have to make a motion to reopen that, or can we just...
I think we did. I thought we did.
We did, yeah.
We did.
We did.
With an April, the last week in April deadline.
Do we need to set a date today, since we're all having to look at calendars or not?
You want to pick a date today?
If y'all...
Everybody.
I just had several things that week, so selfish.
I can make any day but Tuesday or Wednesday. And I can make Tuesday work if that's the preference.
Could we do Monday, April 26th?
Yes.
Can we do Monday the 25th, or is that too hard on you coming from Houston?
Me? Okay.
On the 20th, on what day?
Oh, this room is, that's right, this room is scheduled for a conference that day, but
is it 25th?
Which day?
The 25th and 6th, right?
Yeah. What, Thursday? 28th.
28th
or Monday? We can have it at the Texas Department of Agriculture. I've got a room if you want to do it that day. No problem.
I can do either the 28th. I mean the 25th or the 28th. So
I can't do the 28th.
All right. Is the 25th looking better?
25th is. Would keep me from having to move things, but I can if that's a better date for everybody else.
The 25th work? We'll take you up on your generous offer.
Reserve the conference room.
All right. send us directions.
Stephen F. Austin Building, 1700 North Conyers, 11th floor.
Will we expect it to be the same time?
Yeah. If that works, 10 works for everybody. I
think you can find that, Beck.
I think I know where I can find you, Commissioner. Straight upstairs, right?
Yeah, just get an elevator.
All right. 28th it is.
25th.
I mean the 25th, excuse me.
Everybody got that? April 25th, 10 a.m. Department of Ag Building. Thank you. You ready?
I made it. Motion to adjourn at 11:45.